This is Lee Arnold welcoming you back to Country Music Conversations with this week's guests, the Statler Brothers. They probably hold the record for being the most awarded vocal group in country music. But before we start this conversation, here are a few words from our sponsor. Country Music Conversations with Lee Arnold's podcast is made possible by our sponsor, MarketSmith, Inc., the digital media agency that's been growing brands like Tumi, Shark Ninja, New Jersey Lottery, PSE&G, Blue Mercury Cosmetics, and Dick's Sporting Goods. You know what makes this agency so good at what they do? Because simply being a marketing agency is no longer enough. Solution-based, problem-solving, and ever-evolving, they create enduring value for DTC and B2B brands by opening up and growing marketing channels. Their patented AI offerings, informed by human intelligence, allow them to act with agility and intellect. I was speaking with the CEO not too long ago, and she was saying they take on clients who know who they are, who want to grow, and clients that know what they want. These big brands choose MarketSmith because they want to merge with a partner who'll make them exceptional and an agency that will grow their revenue. Digital marketing is not easy, but MarketSmith, Inc. knows when to make the media dollars work hard for their clients. You have a brand you want to grow? Well, contact MarketSmith.com and tell them Lee Arnold sent you. The Statlers began as a gospel group with Lou DeWitt, who later left the group because of illness. He was replaced by Jimmy Fortune, along with brothers Harold and Don Reed and Phil Balsley. The group named themselves after a brand of facial tissues that they had seen in a hotel room. The Statler style took gospel harmonies and put them in country music. In 1964, after being heard by Johnny Cash, they were hired by the Man in Black as his opening act, and they were with Johnny for 8 years, at which point they left on good terms to start a career of their own. They were signed to Columbia Records, where they scored their signature song, Flowers on the Wall, written by Lou DeWitt. After meeting Jerry Kennedy, the A&R head of Mercury Records, they signed with the label, with Jerry as their producer, and they had 4 number one hits and several top 10 hits. Their stage show featured not only their big hits and harmonies, but they included comedy and parodies in their act. Harold Reed took on the persona as Lester Roadhog Moran, and they recorded 2 comedy albums under this moniker, which satirized small-town radio stations and their Saturday morning shows. In 1980, the Statlers purchased and renovated their former elementary school in their hometown of Stanton, Virginia. The complex consisted of offices for the group, a small museum, and an adjacent building that served as office space for unrelated businesses. The Statlers began performing at an annual Independence Day festival in Stanton, in which they invited big-name country stars to perform with the proceeds going to local charities. This event drew over 90,000 people, and it lasted over 25 years. They really gained an immense exposure with their weekly Statler Brothers shows on the Nashville Network, which began in 1991 and lasted until 1998. In 1982, Lou DeWitt retired from the group and was replaced by Jimmy Fortune. The group disbanded and retired after a farewell tour on October 26, 2002. Phil Balsley and Don Reed still live in their hometown of Stanton, Virginia, as did Harold Reed until his death in 2020. Jimmy Fortune began a second career, and he relocated to Nashville, where he continues his career as a solo artist. Don Reed found a second career as an author, having written 6 books of his own. The Statlers have been honored with awards from the Academy of Country Music, 9 times Vocal Group of the Year from the Country Music Association, along with the induction into both the Country Music Hall of Fame and the Gospel Music Hall of Fame. Our conversation with the Statlers took place in 1991 when they were about to debut their weekly variety show on TNN. They were so much fun to be around, as you'll hear now with our conversation with Harold, Don, Phil, and Jimmy.
It's always a treat for me to be with four of the nicest guys in country music this or any other year, and always a treat to be with the Statlers, who are our guests today again. How you doing, guys?
Okay,
how are you doing?
They're all in unison. Just
yeah. Thank you for that introduction. We appreciate that.
Nice. Yeah, really. When they say entertainers on and off the record, they really mean it. And that's a phrase which has kind of held tight with you guys throughout the years. And also the most awarded group in country music ever.
Well, we'll accept either one of those, and it's nice that we're able to. We've been very fortunate throughout the years in living up to, hoping that we've lived up to, and for the fans having given us those titles.
And, of course, we're doing all that to keep them going to work.
Yeah. We're not going to ask any questions on how you got the name the Statlers. Because if any fans don't know, they don't deserve to be Statler fans.
Right. I like that, Lee.
But we'll still take them.
Right. I like that.
Right now, exciting stuff is happening in your career. You've embarked on a brand-new project, which, as we speak, a couple of weeks ago, had your first show on TNN, your new weekly Saturday night variety show. And it really is something special.
Thanks. Yeah. We've had so much fun doing it, like we were talking just before we started the interview. We've had a ball doing it. It's been so gratifying to see it all come together and work on tape. Mm-hmm. You know, it's great.
How did the idea come about, Harold, for the show?
TNN came to us and said, or came to a producer, friend of ours, and said, let's talk to the Statlers about doing some specials. Mm-hmm. So we said, okay. And we got to talking about specials. And as we were talking television, it sort of evolved into a series. And quite honestly, over the years, we had fought the series idea on several other occasions from other places people had offered us. And we just would not do it because TV has a way of, if you don't control it, it'll gobble you up.
Overexposure.
Chew you up and spit you out. Yeah. So, we were able, and TNN was so gracious about it, we were able to have such control as far as writing and co-producing and everything that we felt it might be the right time in our career and at this particular time in history, as it were, maybe to go in and do TV. It would give us something new to do after all these years. And as Phil said, we have really, really enjoyed doing it.
You have done some very special guest stars lined up all throughout the year, too.
I tell you, looking at the season as a whole, we have, it's like a who's who in country music.
Yeah.
We've had people, and if I start naming them, I'll leave somebody else. We have like Barbara Mandrell and the Oak Ridge Boys and Alan Jackson and Charlie Pride and
Ricky
Roger
Gay,
Miller and Ronnie Jimmy Millsap. Dean and
Jerry Reed.
Goes on Jerry and on.
Lewis.
And it goes, it's just great. We call these people and they say, yeah, they want to be a part of it. And Conway Twitty. And it's just been wonderful to have. Plus, we have done a segment where we have introduced some new faces, new people who are just
regular,
starting in the business.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And we have that along with a variety act, be they a comedian or a juggler or a ventriloquist, whatever. So it's a little bit of something there for everybody.
And we have Janie Fricke, Rex Allen Jr. as regulars on the TV show.
And Butch Baker was introduced in the first week as
exactly
one of the new talents in country music. Along with that, there's a very special part of the show called Yesteryear, which fits so well with the Statler Brothers image. Was that by design?
Oh, yeah. I guess that was almost a natural for us. But what we have done, we've taken a year, and it's sort of a mystery year in as much as the little segment, we give people musical facts. So we go come out and sing a few hit songs from that year, or Janie will sing one, Rex will sing one. We give them a few verbal facts. And as you get to the end of the segment, it's only then that you find out what year it was. So it gives you an opportunity to sit home and guess what year it's going to be down to the end. See how quick you can come up with it.
You're really carrying the banner on that Barbara Mandrell kind of left, the baton of the Saturday Night series, which was so successful. Or we're like a country version of the Ed Sullivan Show, where, you know, for Saturday night is a family night, and it should work real well.
That's what we're hoping. Yeah. That's what we're hoping. Looks that way.
1964. Let's turn the clock back just a little bit. 1964 with, you start out as a gospel group. Is it the Olivet Baptist Church?
Presbyterian Church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, a talent contest played an important part at your elementary school, did it not, in getting you guys started?
Sure did. In fact, go ahead, Phil.
That was in 55, I believe, if I remember right. First talent show we ever entered, and we won. I don't know how, but we did. You know, we were terrible, but I guess everybody else was worse than we were. I don't know. In fact, we have a little plaque in front of the stage, in our gymnasium where our offices are. That's where the talent show took place.
I guess if there's anybody who is instrumental in the Statler Brothers' career as one person of turning it all around, it would have to be Johnny Cash.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Yeah.
He was our beginning. I mean, he's our daddy as far as the music business goes. He put us to work in 64. We were with him for 8.5 years on a handshake. He got us our first record contract, took us around in concert in front of thousands and thousands of people. And, yeah, we owe a lot to John.
When he first saw you, it was a long time or a tough time to get to him to really pay attention for you to join the group. You had to chase him down.
We thought, you know, after we talked to him that day, he said, man, you guys are great. We said, thank you. He said, y'all would really be good opening my show. And we said, thank you. And he shook hands with us and got in the car and left.
That's right.
And we standing there and kind of when the dust settled and we said, what did we accomplish here today? And nobody seemed to know. So immediately went to work on calling John to remind him that, you know, I didn't want him to remind him not to forget us.
Yeah.
And so it took me a while, but I wound up with his home phone number and I bugged him so bad. I think he finally put us to work just to keep me from calling.
Did he originally get you the deal with Columbia Records?
Yes, he did.
Sure did.
And of course, the beginning of a long career. You also sang with him on, in 1968, one of the biggest Johnny Cash hits, a song called Daddy Sang Bass. Me and Little Brothers and John right in there.
Right. That's right. We
did a lot of backup work on some of those.
Your memory of that session? Did you have a feeling that was going to be big?
Yeah.
That song?
Yeah.
The natural.
Yeah, it just felt good.
Yeah.
Even before the session, you know, the song the first time we heard it, we knew it was going to be a hit.
Well, Carl Perkins wrote that.
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What a great song. Flowers on the Wall started it all off. Who would have thought that a novelty song written by the late Lou DeWitt, one of the original members of the group, would do what it did for you? I mean, it's pretty hard to have an immense hit, pop and country crossover hit, as your first one right out of the bag, and then follow up and continue that legacy.
There's a really strange story about Flowers on the Wall is, we liked the song. We sat down and arranged it, and we felt like we probably had done it as well as we could do it. And the song, of course, we were young and green and stupid and didn't know much. And all of a sudden, we had this gigantic hit. It was a crossover hit. It was on the country charts. It was on the pop charts.
Got your Grammy.
Yeah. Sure, we're talking about a million-selling record, and all of a sudden, we're standing around saying, well, if it's that easy, why didn't we do it earlier, you know? So all of a sudden, we make this big, we get to thinking, well, all we have to do is do whatever we did before, and we will have these big crossover hits.
Right.
That you can't figure that one, as we well know now, and most everybody else does too. But we went for about 3 or 4 years struggling, really trying. Finally, we sit down one day, looked at each other in the eye, and said, hey, guys, you know, we need to be doing country. That's where we are. That's where our head is. That's what we know. That's our roots. Let's do that. So we left Columbia Records and went over to Mercury Records. Hooked up with Jerry Kennedy, who is still, after all these years, our producer, and went over there and made this big country commitment, recorded a song called Bed of Roses, and the first thing it did was crossover went on the pop charts. So it ain't no way you can figure it.
Can't figure this business.
Phil, why do you think that the group has endured over all these years while so many have come and gone since you guys have started?
Oh, I don't know, Lee. I guess it's because we were friends before we ever got in the business. You know, grew up knowing each other. And we've made many commitments since that time that, by golly, whatever it takes, we're going to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And you make it work, by golly, because that's what you have to do. You
know? I bet there were times pretty hard making decisions. It was all pretty democratic process throughout the years. You guys seem to be friends first and then business partners.
Yeah. And it is a democratic process when we decide something. We sit down and talk about it and decide if three of us want to do it and one doesn't, well, by golly, we do it because three want to do it. You know?
Majority rules.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Jimmy, you had a difficult task at the time you joined the group, got back, I guess, around 82, 81, 82.
Right, 82.
Replacing Lou DeWitt, who got sick at the time. Were you a fan of the group prior to joining the Statler?
Yeah, I loved the Statler Brothers and were familiar with a lot of the songs anyway. And I really if I'd had a lot of time to think about it, I don't know what I'd done when they first called me, because I didn't really have much time to think about it. But once I sat down, I said, wait a minute, these are the Staller brothers, you know. How can somebody come in and actually take the place of another person, you know, at first? And then, and actually, you don't take anybody else's place. You make a place for yourself. That's right. So I think that's probably the way it worked out.
And that's what he did, and did it well. Yeah.
You were really, at the time, working at a car dealership over in Charlottesville, right?
Yeah, I worked at Charlottesville.
And working at night in the band?
I worked six, sometimes seven nights a week playing music in the band.
How did you guys discover him? Did you hear about him? Because you auditioned several other guys besides Jimmy before you decided on him.
We heard about him, and Jimmy's the first one we listened to.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then there were others, but
about 25 others, really.
Yeah, he had two auditions, didn't he, really?
Yeah, right.
He was the first one and the last one. Yeah.
I made sure I got in there. I can tell you that.
Harold, both you and Don have written several hits together over the years. All of them, which one are you proudest most of as songwriters? Not necessarily as a hit for a number one or a top 10 record. But which song would really stand out of all the songs you've written, co-written together, as a song which gives you a lot of great, great inner satisfaction?
We've done a lot together. We wrote a song called Dad.
Yeah.
It's an album song. Probably a lot of people haven't heard it because it wasn't a single nor a big radio song. That means a lot to us.
Mm. Many of your hits, Harold, you show your whole persona is based on nostalgia, Americana, patriotism. Was that by design, or did that evolve because of your individual feelings?
No, quite honestly, it wasn't by design. In fact, we were almost, I think I can safely say we were almost into being known for nostalgia before we realized
what it was.
That, well, yeah. Before we could spell it. Yeah. One day we couldn't spell it, next day we was it. no, we were always interested in, I mean, being a group, we had a little bit of advantage there. We rode in that old Cadillac for years, you know, up and down the road, and we would talk about things we did as kids, and then you'd wind up writing a song about it, or movies you'd seen, or old cowboy stars, or whatever the case may be, and all of a sudden, it starts reflecting. Mm-hmm. It starts showing up in your music, and people are coming to you and say, hey, I can identify with that.
Right.
And what we started noticing was, no matter where you were raised, no matter what part of the country you were raised in, everybody's got the same memories. Everybody's got childhood memories, those teenage years or whatever the case may be. And we started writing about them and actually doing a lot of that before we really made a conscious effort. You know, then all of a sudden people said, well, they were giving us credit for starting the nostalgia craze and all that kind of thing. I don't know if that's true or not, but we sure did. We certainly had a portion of it.
Fans think of you in the terms of nostalgia.
Yeah, they do.
When they think of the Stappers, they think of... Yeah. Of all those things.
And that's the reason then when we go to write a TV show that we go through this yesteryear thing we're talking about, it's a natural thing to do and, of course, a fun thing to do. I mean, there's enough, but probably, like somebody said here a minute ago, it's probably one of our favorite parts of the show.
Right. Phil, when you think back to the inception of the group back in the mid-60s, how has the sound and the harmonies changed to the Stapplers?
Sure, it's changed a little bit because, if nothing else, growing older will change your voice somewhat, you know, your maturity and so forth. It hasn't changed a whole lot. Not as far as the harmonies and all, but it's changed a little bit since Jimmy got here. We do harmonize a little different way now.
Jimmy not only gave you
it is a different dimension, sure.
Yeah,
different look, so to speak. Yeah.
Absolutely, and also contributed as a songwriter.
Sure, yes, he has.
Tried to.
Yes, he has.
The one song I think which the fans will remember Jimmy Fortune for is Elizabeth. Which turned out to be a number one song for the Stapplers across the board. And the inspiration for it was
the name.
Quite interesting. And the name, yeah. Tell us about
I had heard the name over and over and over. It kept coming up. It's such a pretty name anyway. And, of course, you know, we'd watched this movie called Giant with Elizabeth Taylor in it.
Mm-hmm.
And she impressed me so much in that movie, too, that I thought, well, maybe, you know, we should come up with some kind of song or something. So I got this melody and the name fit right with it. And so when we sung it together, we knew it was magic. And it was, of course, the first song that I brought to them to record. So.
Don encouraged you, too.
Right, yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. I had taken him some things. As a matter of fact, I took him the chorus to that, and he told me to go back and finish it. And so that's what I did.
And we sang it to Elizabeth one night, too.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Taylor.
We actually got to sing it to her. Yeah. I mean,
that's terrific.
Was that on a movie set or something she was doing?
Yeah.
Old Tucson. TV movie? Old Tucson, yeah.
Right, yeah.
We stopped by and sang it to her.
What was your impression after
that? Well, I asked to be on her wedding list.
Guest list?
No.
The wedding list.
What wedding list? Okay.
He wanted to be the next groom.
Just my pencil.
Hey, she may call me any day. I'm still waiting.
Harold, all you guys are old movie buffs, and particularly you and Don, and you have quite a collection. How many old films do you have now?
I knew somebody one of these days was going to ask us that again. I must have 700-800 myself. I don't know, right. And that's just mine.
We have thousands together. I don't have any.
But you watch them on the bus.
Oh, yeah. We have a library of them in our offices at home that we all have together, and I mean, it's just they're kind of like little rabbits.
We measure miles on the bus now by movies. Instead of saying, oh, that's 200 miles between dates, we say, oh, that's about a movie and a half. So we don't get all as we're watching one.
That's a good way to gauge it. You had to be moved recently by the death of Frank Capra, because I know, Harold, he was one of your all-time favorite directors.
He certainly was.
It's a Wonderful Life. I think it's one of your favorite films, isn't it?
It truly is. Jimmy Stewart? We're planning a little small tribute in our own little way this Christmas. Our Christmas card, our company Christmas card, has the Stoutland brothers standing out in the street in front of a marquee that says It's a Wonderful Life, and with a theater behind us, and it will be in tribute to Frank Capra.
What is it about that era of the movies that you watch, those great, great classic films? Why are they so different than today's movies?
Because they had discipline. You had to tell a story and get feelings across without just throwing every door wide open and being able to do or say everything. You had to do it with discipline and with class and with dignity, and they did it then and still did it well.
With nuance and shadow and all the things that tell the right kind of story.
It was more real.
John Wayne summed it up one time. He said, we made movies then. We did everything that people think they're doing in movies now, but we left some of it to your imagination.
And that's right.
That says it all.
Sure does.
Yeah. All American Country, your latest album, is a little bit more contemporary. A little bit of a stretch, Don, isn't it?
Yeah, we think so. Mm-hmm. We tried to put a little bit of that into it. We have, like you say, we got nostalgia songs. We got some ballads in there. We have a little bit of everything, but we think it's more today.
Mm-hmm. And you really run the gamut. You know, you have a gospel song in there. You got the novelty thing.
Right.
And a lot of great balance.
Kind of like the TV show, Lee. Something there for everybody.
Way to go, Don.
Yeah.
Wow, what a move.
At this point in your career, is it still all about hit records?
Oh, sure.
You always want a hit record. Always.
Yeah.
The only bad thing about that is when you get as involved as we are with the TV project, like we said a while ago, we have to let some concert dates go. You can't concentrate on everything as much as, you know, when you've got four or five arms out there. And we have really been submerged in the TV project. We're trying not to let any of them go slack, but you know, it's hard to keep up with all of it.
Phil, when you're off the road and you're back in Stanton, you guys are just kind of laying back for a little bit. When you go into the office, I guess like the rest of the guys do you read fan mail?
Yeah, we see some fan mail.
What do the fans say to you?
We don't see a lot of it. We see some of it. Mostly they say, thanks for coming to Omaha or wherever we've been, and we're glad to see you, and we're looking forward to you come back, and can't wait for your next album, and thank you for doing such and such a song, and that kind of thing.
They know more about you than you know.
Oh, they sure do. Yes.
I'll bet at this point in time, you're seeing a whole new generation of Stafford fans. The sons and daughters of mom and dad
sure
used to come.
I hate to admit that, but that's true.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
But it's good.
Sure.
And your own kids have gotten involved in the music thing. I know your son Will and your daughters Harold were both songwriters. And
My son Will, in fact, wrote a song that we have on this latest album. And my daughter Kim's a writer, and Will and Don's son Langdon and another boy Chris Campbell from our hometown, they got a little group, and Mark Robertson, they have a little group called Grand Staff, and they're out testing their wings. Doing a great job.
Did they come to you, or did you encourage him, or was this on their own?
No, that's pretty much on their own, truly.
Jimmy, let's go back to 1983, if we can. A little bit of a flashback to a recording session when you guys cut a song called Guilty. That was a pretty unique moment for all of you time, wasn't it? For what happened in that session?
That was when Conway Twitty came in.
Yeah. He finished it.
He came in.
You couldn't finish it.
Right. He just we were sitting there trying to think of some good ending to come up with, and he said he happened to be in there, and he didn't offer it. You know, we asked him, you know, well, what would you do? You know, so he didn't like butt in on us, but he came in and, you know, was asked to, and he, I think, did a real good job with helping us come up with an ending for that song.
It was one of those things that from the outside looking in, it was pretty obvious what we should be doing, but we were so involved in it.
Yeah.
He was next door at studio, and we went over and was listening to him for a minute or two, and then he came over, and he just happened to be over for about the second time that night, and we were just struggling over that ending. And he said, well, just do so-and-so and so-and-so, and we said, yeah, that makes sense. Thank you, Conway. Then we sent him on back over to his recording.
That's a great story.
It was great.
Harold, the song we talked about before, that turned out to be a crossover hit as well, called Bed of Roses, one of your most well-remembered hits of the Statler Brothers catalog, one that you wrote. And it was a song that really started your relationship with Jerry Kennedy as your producer that's lasted over 20 years now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
He lasted longer than people thought we were going to live. But there you go.
When you first came to him, you had written it and you presented it to him, and that's how he ended up.
We had carried Bed of Roses around in our hip pocket for about
2 or 3 years,
close to 2 years. Yeah. We tried to get it recorded over at Columbia, and they were, well, they would lock us out of the door. Actually, there was actually certain rooms we couldn't go in over there. they didn't want us on the parking lot. Anyway, that's another story. Anyway, we had, we'd carried it around and actually tried to record it, and it just wasn't anything happening at Columbia, and as far as we were concerned. And so we had cut a session a couple of years before that, and Jerry Kennedy was on it as a guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
And we met him and really liked him just immediately. So I called Jerry up one day, and I said, Jerry, our paper's up over at Columbia, and we wonder if we can come by and talk to you at Mercury about recording. He said, come on by. We went by and talked to him. He said, come on in, let's do a session. And we went in and cut Bed of Roses.
Bed of Roses, the subject matter at the time, was a little bit bold, maybe a little bit racy.
Probably,
a little bold.
Because it was about a boy's coming of age and, you know, story of life.
The nicest compliment I guess I got on Bed of Roses was, we were in Hotel Nashville right after it came out. And Don got up one morning, was going down to breakfast, and got on the elevator. And Chris Stobberson was on the elevator. He said, good morning, Don. Don said, morning, Chris. How are you? And he said, who wrote it? And Don said, wrote what? He said, Bed of Roses. And Don said, my brother Harold wrote it. And he said, I'm going to break his hands.
That's the highest compliment you can get.
Believe it.
As a songwriter.
It is. That's great.
I knew then I had a ride.
Unless Irving Berlin gives you half a hit.
Yeah, right.
That's about as high as you can get.
Don, do you still have that old beat up Lucky Green hat you used to take to record?
Wow,
sessions?
Lee?
Golly, Lee.
Where are you finding this stuff, Lee? Yeah, dude. You want to wear it?
Man.
Don had that hat on the session of Bed of Roses.
He did.
There is
a Lucky Green hat.
And I wore it on that session, and it's been in every session since.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't fit, though.
Yeah, my head's gotten a lot bigger since then and a half on.
His head has gotten bigger.
Harold, all right, we'll get to Jimmy now for one. Jimmy, another song which is a standout, which you wrote for the group and yourself. It's turned out to be one of the greatest number one hits the Statlers have ever done. I'm sure it'll be included in a lot of shows for years to come. My Only Love.
I wrote that song for my brother's wedding. He had gotten me to come sing for his wedding. He wanted me to sing a Lionel Richie song or something like that. And it was like the day before, it was like rehearsals there. And I said, he didn't have the sheet music or anything. I said, Tony, I don't know that song. So I said, why don't I just go home and write you one? Mm-hmm. I felt like I just had this feeling, you know, that I could write a song. But I went back home, and that's what I came up with.
Great song.
Well, thank you.
I bet it's been used a lot of weddings ever since.
Yeah, sure
it
does.
We get mail about that, too.
Yes. It lasted a lot longer than the marriage did. Oh, no.
Don't say that. Lasted longer than I thought it was going to. It was a joke, Tony.
I guess, Harold, that the fans have been an inspiration of sorts for a lot of the songs you've written. And one comes to mind called Do You Know You Are My Sunshine?
Oh, boy. Mm-hmm. That truly, we were in a park in northern Indiana one Sunday afternoon, outdoor park. Had already done one show that afternoon. I got down about sunset. we were doing the second show, and we were talking to the people like we do, having a good time, people sitting around on the grass, and there's a whole lot of people there. And went from talking to them to kidding around with them to taking requests. And this young lady walked up to the stage and asked me to come over to the side, and I leaned down, and she whispered to my ear, she said, "Do you know You Are My Sunshine?" And, of course, she was requesting the old song, "You Are My mm-hmm. Sunshine." And, boy, it hit me right square between the eyes. I thought, boy, what a name for a song. So we got through with the show, and I went and wrote that idea down real quick and worked on a little bit of the bridge, I believe. And I mentioned it to Don, and we were both kind of busy and never got to it. Anyway, 2-3 months later, we were in Nashville, and we come home one night after a session, come back to the hotel after a session, and I think wrote the song for the session the next morning, went in and recorded the next day.
Unbelievable. Great story.
It's
when I think about the history of the Statler Brothers and the songs you've done, Don, songs like Only You, Hello Mary Lou, Oh Baby Mine, pop-oriented songs that were pop hits originally, that you flirted with and made them country hits, which at the time was kind of an adventurous thing to do for a group that was so highly identifiable with a basic traditional country sound.
And with original material.
Right.
And we knew we were taking a chance when we did that. But we liked those old songs. And early rock, 50s rock, is so close to today's country.
Oh, it really is.
It's almost traditional country.
Yeah, it's closer than what rock is today, you know, to that. Yeah. And so it has worked for us, and we still love doing those.
Mm-hmm. Another one of your number one favorites with a very heavy message, Jimmy, is Too Much on My Heart, which you wrote.
Yeah, I wrote that song. We were getting ready to go on a tour, and we were leaving like that night. And I had a son that had some pretty serious surgery. And so it's kind of a downer song, but it was really close to my heart. But we were having to leave that night. He came out of surgery, and it kind of had me in a down mood. So I came home, and I wrote that. And I sat down and wrote that on a piece of paper and put the music to it, then took it to them later when we were looking for some songs for the album and played it, and they liked it, so we cut the song in.
Are there times when you get dry spells when it comes to writing? I mean, Don and Harold and yourself. Do you go through that period?
I don't as much. I mean, Don don't as much as I do. Just like now, all of our energies are into TV. Writing TV, you know. Mm-hmm. So you don't sit down. Sometimes you're too tired. If you get a song idea, you're too tired to sit down and write it. So you make a note, stick it in your book, and think you'll worry about that later. Mm-hmm. Don is much more prolific than I.
Mm-hmm. And me too. I can pretty much, if I get an idea, I'll sit down and try to write it. But I don't go with that intentions of going in and writing a song every day.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen to me that way.
Phil, of all the Statler performances over the years, is there any one particular night that stands out in your mind as being, boy?
Tell me about something cute I did, Bill.
Go ahead.
Go on.
I know one, a couple of cute things.
Oh,
I'll let you get into that later.
Go ahead.
Anything in a particular night
that was very moving for you because of the time, the place, the moment?
I think we'll probably touch on this later, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I think some of the Happy Birthday USA things, the July 4th in our hometown, have been very moving to us.
Right.
Some of the moments and some of the guests that we've had and the way things have worked out. Also, I think we've had some awful nice evenings. We went to the White House a few times.
And you've been quite a few presents.
Yes. Yes, we have. Yeah. It's a very touching thing to do. It's very, very humbling.
In fact, over Cleveland was the first one. Boy, I could eat.
He was a porker, wasn't he?
Well, a porker. What a porker.
Speaking of funny things, Harold, I'm going to mention two words to you, and or just a phrase, and I think you know what I mean. Charlotte, North Carolina. Let her rip.
Okay, we hit the stage one night in Charlotte, North Carolina. Coliseum held about 12,000 people, and it was every bit of that there. Place was sold out. People behind us, beside us, up on top, down on the bottom. And we had some brand new tailor-made white suits. And I was just as proud of them suits. Man, it's the first night we had them on. And they said, "Ladies and gentlemen, Statler Brothers." And we hit that stage. And when we bowed, something went. And my pants went all the way from the waistband to the crotch. I mean, it was the whole seat went out of them, truthfully. So we sang the first song. And I'm standing there feeling real uncomfortable. I thought, wow, what am I going to do about this? So when we finished the song, I turned around and just bent over and showed them what had happened so that I wouldn't have to worry about it the rest of the night. They knew then that I'd ripped my pants. I knew I couldn't go change. I didn't have another pair like them, so I did it. So the moral of the story, of course, is don't ever wear red underwear with a white suit.
That's a great story.
It's true.
It is, yeah.
Don, I guess of all the songs you've written, All American Girl is kind of special because that's the one that took the longest to write, didn't it?
Yeah. It's almost like a riddle when you think of it. But Harold and I wrote the song, and it took us 5 years to write it.
Wow.
And how that happened, we wrote a chorus. And we came up with the chorus. We were in Hawaii, and we were walking through a little gift shop, and for some reason talking about this idea. And Harold took a guitar down off the wall that was for sale there, tuned it up, and we wrote this chorus of All American Girl. And we put it aside, put it in a file.
Some people go to Hawaii to pick up girls. We write songs.
We write songs.
You picked up a guitar.
We put it in a file, and we didn't get. We said we'd get back to it and finish it sometime. 5 years later, we're going through the file one night when we're writing songs. We find this chorus. We finish it. We write it, and we record it. So it, from the time it was begun to it was finished, it was 5 years.
It was a five-year-old American girl.
Yeah, exactly.
I put on a grass skirt and we knocked that thing off. Yeah.
I guess, Phil, Stanton, Virginia, where you guys are from, which is your home, where you live, is, I guess you could call Stanton every town USA.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of an old American town, so, or we feel like it is anyway, yeah. Yeah. It's pretty much...
Your own elementary school is now your office, which,
that's right.
Which you purchased some years ago.
That's right. You stand in the hallway and you look down at that gymnasium and you say, wow, what are we doing with this? You know, but it brings back a lot of memories, especially Don and Harold, because they went to school right there.
They used to tell us not to run in the halls. Now nobody has to tell us. We don't run anyway. Now we wish we could run the halls.
Happy Birthday USA, which is your annual event down there in Stanton, which 85,000 fans come, and you have a special guest artist every year. This past year it was Charlie Pride and Neil McCoy. Mm-hmm. You've had the biggest and the best over the years. And all the money that's raised goes to support all the local charities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite a humanitarian effort. How did the idea come about several years ago? Because it's been going on for quite a while.
We were looking for a way to say thank you to Stanton because they supported us through those rough, lean years when we were first starting out. And we went to the city fathers and said, we'd like to do something. So we got together and we did it that first year, not knowing whether it's going to be successful or not. And it was, and it's grown from that, from having thousands. I don't know what we had the first year. I don't remember.
3,500.
Yeah,
probably. Yeah.
Which was terrific.
Yeah. So then it went on to where it's been 90,000 people. And matter of fact, 1994 will be the last year for it. It'll be the 25th year. We figure after 25 years, what can you do?
Exactly.
But it'll be the last year of our involvement in it anyway. But it sure has been one of the more fulfilling things that we have ever done. And we're thankful to be able to raise all that money for the people through the years and to have all of our friends who have come in and, mm-hmm. and helped. Boy, they've been wonderful.
I remember a couple of years ago, the very sad thing happened. You like things to go off smoothly. I know you had booked Ricky Van Shelton, who was supposed to be on the show. And there was some kind of controversy. He wanted a special canopy built because of the rain or some kind of deal. And as it was, he didn't show and he wasn't on the show. Right. That had to hurt you guys a little bit, too, I guess, because country basically is supposed to be a family affair. The people in country music, whether I know everybody competes as vocalists, whether the Oaks or the, you know, Alabama or the Stabbers, but it's all a family feeling. I guess that had to be a little bit tough to take at the time.
It really didn't hurt us. I mean, we had the same amount of people there, you know. We hated that he didn't get to come have a good time because he really missed a good time.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah.
But 94 will be the last year.
Yeah.
Yes, it will.
94 will be the last year. Don, you've had a fascination with a great reader. I mean, John O'Hara is your favorite novelist.
The guy can read without moving his mouth.
Really?
I'm telling you, he can. John O'Hara can.
I've seen him do it, I think.
What's your favorite John O'Hara novel?
Oh, A Rage to Live.
Why?
I don't know. It just fascinated me. It captured me. I got caught up in his characters, up in his way of life. And from there, I started and read everything he wrote, from short stories to newspaper articles to other novels.
You might want to tell him how young you were when you were reading that, though.
Oh, I started reading when I was 16 years old.
Really?
Yeah, it's when I first found him. Yeah.
And a lot of John O'Hara's characters and novels became songs. Part of them.
Yeah, that's true. I borrowed from that, learned from the things he wrote about, learned from that. I even did a pilgrimage to his hometown in Pennsylvania, went up and searched out his birthplace, where he was born. You know, I really got really was taken by him and the way he wrote.
If you guys ever decide to hang it up someday and retire, do you ever think you will? And if you do, what would you do, Phil? How would you spend retirement?
I'm not sure I'm to that point where I know that yet, Lee, to be honest.
Are there like things you've always wanted to do that you've been restricted
to? I've always wanted to repair bicycle tires.
Really?
But I don't know.
Admirable profession. Yeah,
well, there you go. I mean, you don't have any patches, though, do you?
As crazy as it sounds, Lee, sometimes I think I'd like to just hop in the automobile. This sounds crazy after all these years of running,
right,
and take my wife and just take off and go see some of the places
I've seen. I feel the same way. I'd like to hop over and take his wife and go somewhere. I'd love
not.
To do that.
You better not.
Well, there you go. She said the same thing to me.
When the group first formed and you guys were working, you had day jobs, didn't you, before it all took off?
Everybody but Don. He never has worked.
Really?
I will say this. The rest of us did. You know, we
What'd
went out
do?
And
What'd
cut the
do?
Mustard
Put
a little bit, brought a little money home.
What'd
he
you
sat
do?
Around and waited for us to get successful.
And then
he got on board. Right. He jumped in at the right time.
Yeah. What'd you do as a day job?
I worked as a psychiatric aide at a mental hospital.
Really?
Sure did. That's where I learned.
His character.
My character, yeah. Sure did.
You're not going to believe this, but I had the same kind of job that Harold
Across
had.
Across the mountain, 40 miles away.
40 miles
sure
away
did.
At one time.
Sure did.
How about you, Phil?
I was a bookkeeper for my dad.
Uh-huh. And you're still, that carried over into the group.
Yeah, his dad went out of business, uh-huh, and then he came over and started keeping
trying to put these guys out of business now.
Start messing up your books.
Yeah, right.
Harold, do you still have a fear of flying?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Because I know
and I'll tell you what it is. I finally figured out what it is. I'm afraid the plane is going to go down and kill me.
Uh-huh.
It's just that simple. It's no deep psychosis to it. I'm afraid it's going to go.
He was.
And I'll be dead. And I don't want to be dead.
That's a good point.
How has the road, the life on the road, affected your family life? Is it because you know, we're on the road a lot when your kids were growing up, away from your wives and your family in Stanton? Did it affect it much?
I think it made us appreciate it more. You cherish the time you're there, and you make sure that time you spent there is even more intense.
One important quote and your reaction to it. We don't think anyone is an authority on this business except the fans.
That's right.
Boy, I don't know who said that, but that is a rich statement. Right
True
there.
Words were never spoken.
Right there.
Yes.
I believe you're the one who said it.
Well, then let me count. I think that's exactly right. In all seriousness, that's exactly right. They not only should have all the input, they should have all the say-so, and they should have they are going to have the last say. You can bet on that.
Yeah.
Of all the awards you've won, which is the most precious to you? And yet there have been over 400.
The last one.
Yeah.
Whatever the last one was, because you say, my Lord, after we've been doing it all this time and they still like what we're doing, we appreciate it even more than the one before.
That's great.
Good
answer.
That's
good
right.
Answer. Well, I want to thank you guys for joining us on the Country Road. And, of course, the show is called the Statler's Variety Show on TNN every Saturday night, and with a lot of great guest stars and featuring the Statlers.
Lee, let me say something. You always make it easy.
That's
yes,
right.
You do.
Oh,
we appreciate
thank
it.
You
it's
for that.
Just like sitting down talking to an old friend, and we appreciate that.
Well, we consider you old friends. Cause
we do, too.
I consider myself older than dirt. That goes back a little bit. But I really appreciate you guys coming by, because it's always a joy just to sit and catch up with you on what's going on. And I know Thanks. That the TV series is going to be an enormous success. Wish you all the best.
Thank you, Lee.
Thanks,
Lee. Appreciate it.
There, my friends, are the Fabulous Statlers. Next week on Country Music Conversations, our guest will be Tanya Tucker. Until then, Lee Arnold with a reminder to stay safe and keep it country.